The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service. And this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'll be reading articles from the Harvard Health Letter, the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, and also from UCLA Health. And in fact, the first article I'm going to read is called Worried About Senior Moments. And it comes from UCLA Health. This is the most recent issue. Dementia testing can help discern what is normal and what is not. Chances are you've walked into a room and suddenly forgotten what you were looking for. Or perhaps during a conversation, a certain word eluded you. Those episodes, often dubbed senior moments, are generally just temporary lapses in memory. If we compare people in their 20s with older people, the younger people almost always do better on memory tests, explains neurologist Edmund Tang, the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. Much of what we call senior moments might be more attentional or focus-related, or it could be processing speed. Information just can't be processed as fast as it used to be. Trying to discern what is normal age-related forgetfulness versus something more serious is not always a black-and-white issue. Small lapses in memory are generally no big deal. For example, not being able to recall a person's name upon seeing them, then remembering that name sometime later, is less likely to be of concern. The people who later remember things they've forgotten are more likely to be experiencing normal age-related memory changes, says Dr. Tang. It's the people who don't remember that they have forgotten things. That's when our level of suspicion goes up. Other instances that raise concern include repetitive questioning within a short period of time, getting lost on familiar routes, memory loss that affects daily function, falling for similar financial scams multiple times. If you or your loved ones experience some of the above situations, the first step is to see a primary care doctor or a geriatric physician. That physician will typically do a short cognitive screening test before deciding whether to refer you to a specialist for more extensive memory testing. A common test called the mini-cog includes comprehension and recall. The patient is asked to draw a circle for a clock and to place the hands to reflect the specific time, such as 10 minutes after 11. For recall, the physician asks the patient to remember three unrelated words like chair, pineapple, and dust. Then later during the exam, the physician will ask for those words to be recalled. The mini mental status exam, or MMSE, is another commonly used assessment. It's a quick way to evaluate language function, attention, speed of processing, visual and visual-spatial context, and executive function. The test takes about 10 minutes. Like the mini-cog, the MMSE does not diagnose a specific underlying disease, but it can indicate if there are cognitive problems that warrant further investigation. The MMSE consists of a series of questions and tests. For example, orientation. What is today's date and season? Attention and calculation. Count backward from 100 by sevens. Language. Look at a pencil and state out loud what it is. If these short exams suggest a potential problem, the physician may refer a patient to a specialist for further evaluation. Neurologists are medical doctors who specialize in diseases of the brain, the spinal cord, and the nerves. They are often consulted for neurologic and memory problems related to such diseases as Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, and Alzheimer's. Neurologists have expertise in various regions of the brain and the roles these regions play in physical and mental functioning. Geriatric psychiatrists are also medical doctors. They specialize in distinguishing between physical and psychological causes of disorders in older adults. They are experts at dealing with memory problems that involve psychiatric issues like major depression, anxiety, agitation, or delusions. Geriatric psychologists hold PhD degrees in psychology and specialize in psychologic assessment and treatment of mental and nervous disorders in older adults. They focus on memory, competency, depression and adjustment disorders, like grieving the death of a loved one. Through testing and therapy, they can help patients with various psychological problems, including those associated with memory loss. Tests with these experts are more comprehensive, requiring about an hour and a half and possibly multiple visits. The tests may include neuropsychological assessment, paper-based and conversational, to evaluate memory and various aspects of thinking. Diagnostic tests may also be ordered, like blood tests, MRIs, and CT scans. Some medical illnesses and medications can impact a person's memory and cognitive function. That's why multiple tests may be needed to identify the causes of these symptoms. There is an attached table that distinguishes between signs of Alzheimer's and typical age-related changes. For example, a sign of Alzheimer's might be poor judgment and decision-making, whereas typical age-related change might be making a bad decision once in a while. A sign of Alzheimer's might be difficulty having a conversation, whereas a typical age-related change might be sometimes forgetting what word to use. There is an attached brief article called Memory Changes as We Age. Individual experiences vary, but there are common changes that can occur with aging. People often wonder if a memory lapse is age-related or something more serious. It's not always a clean divide, explains Dr. Teng. Because people live longer than they used to, it's more challenging to discern between normal and abnormal cognitive aging. Not all memory loss is normal. Progressively worsening memory loss is not healthy aging. Though everyone experiences mind and body aging differently, researchers have found some broad commonalities. Laura Germain, PhD, and her colleagues at Massachusetts General Hospital have researched how certain elements of memory and cognition peak at different times of life. Here's an overview of their findings. It's called the Age-Related Stages of Memory. 20s, brain development peaks. You can learn, reason, process, problem solve, and remember new information as quickly as you'll ever be able to. 30s, learning, processing, reasoning ability, and thinking speed gradually decline. Working memory, the ability to quickly call up information, peaks. 40s, cognitive function and memory are generally strong, Subtle changes in your ability to remember new information begin. Reasoning skills slow. The ability to multitask declines. 50s. Mild forgetfulness sets in. Memory, processing skills, and the ability to learn new information gradually declines. Your ability to recall vocabulary and general knowledge improves. 60s. Memory, processing skills, and other executive functions continue to decline. Comprehension of vocabulary and general knowledge stays stable. 70s. You have more trouble with working memory and information recall. It's harder to formulate concepts and think abstractly. The risk of dementia rises. 80s. There's trouble with both short-term and long-term memory. It's harder to remember everyday words and names. By age 85, nearly one out of three people has Alzheimer's disease changes in the brain. Next, once again from UCLA Health, is an article entitled, Are You Tired All the Time? These non-sleep-related conditions may be the cause of your fatigue. If you are frequently exhausted during the day, you may suspect a sleep disorder. And while it's a good place to start, there may be some other reasons for your daytime tiredness. Fatigue and sleepiness are two different things, says clinical psychologist Jennifer Martin, PhD, David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA. Sleepiness means you're not getting enough good quality sleep, and during the day you can't keep your eyes open. Fatigue is not having a lot of energy. You can feel that way from chronic pain, stress, or exercising too much. Anemia. Also known as having a low red blood cell count, anemia can cause fatigue, shortness of breath, and headaches. In addition to having lower than normal amounts of red blood cells, the cells may not have enough hemoglobin, an iron-rich protein that helps circulate oxygen around the blood. Anemia can be both mild or severe, but both should be treated. A blood test can reveal if you are anemic. Common causes are deficiencies in iron, folate, or vitamin B12. Foods rich in these nutrients can help correct the problem. The foods you choose. Not eating enough and eating the wrong foods, like highly processed and sugary foods like donuts, won't provide the nutritional fuel you need to power through the day, which can lead to feeling tired. Combining proteins with complex carbohydrates will help you stave off hunger and keep your body and brain energized. Some patients tell me they get tired after eating certain foods, says Dr. Martin. If you eat something that makes you tired, don't eat it. Likewise, if you eat something at night that keeps you awake, avoid it. Underactive thyroid. The thyroid gland makes a hormone that affects metabolism and is involved with how the body converts energy from food. Hypothyroidism is the medical term for an underactive thyroid. When food metabolizes too slowly, the result can be fatigue. The disease is more common among people over 60 and affects women more than men. To diagnose hypothyroidism, a physician will take a full medical history and perform blood tests to check thyroid function and hormone levels. The condition is treatable with medication. Depression. It's commonly thought of as a mental and emotional disorder, but depression also has physical symptoms, including headaches, loss of appetite, and fatigue. Depression is one of the most common disorders in the United States and can happen at any age. In older adults, depression can occur in tandem with other serious chronic conditions. Being depressed drains energy. Sometimes the medications used to treat depression may help resolve the fog of depression, but the medication side effect may include fatigue. Always report any medication side effect to your physician, as there may be other options to try. Urinary tract infection. Urinary tract infections are among the most common infections. Women are more likely to get them, but men, especially as they get older, are more prone to urinary tract infections as well. While burning and itching upon urination are the most typical symptoms, older adults are more likely to feel tired, shaky, weak, and have muscle aches. Any infection can make people feel tired, says Dr. Martin. It can cause both fatigue and sleepiness. It's also harder to get a good sleep because you may have pain or other symptoms from the infection. Dehydration. Not getting enough fluids can lead to fatigue. While the general rule of thumb has been 8 8-ounce glasses of water per day, it may be different for you. If you sweat a lot, you're going to need more. Simply hiking outdoors on a hot, humid day can cause you to perspire more than you think. Drink water before such an outing or a hard workout like tennis. Depending on how long you're at the activity, it may help to drink a little during your activity as well. You know you're well hydrated when urine is light in color. There are many other medical conditions such as heart and lung disease, diabetes, and fibromyalgia, as well as medications that can cause fatigue. Sometimes trying a different medication or taking it at a different time of day may solve the problem. Now I'm going to turn to a section of UCLA Health entitled Ask the Doctor. And this is a series of questions that are asked of the editor-in-chief, who is Dr. Jonathan Wanagat, Assistant Professor, Division of Geriatrics. Question. I've heard that exercise can be a natural antidepressant. Is that really true? Yes, it is true. One of the best health choices you can make is to exercise regularly. Not only is exercise a natural antidepressant, it also may protect you against getting depression or having a depressive episode. Physical activity releases endorphins, which are brain chemicals that help you feel good, and they promote nerve cell growth. Research has found that exercising as little as 30 minutes per day can be effective natural antidepressant. A number of studies have focused on aerobic exercise, but some have shown that resistance training can also work well. Consistency and intensity are also important. A few years ago, researchers from Duke University compared exercise to antidepressant medication. Study participants included 156 older adults with major depressive disorder. One group did aerobic exercise 3 times per week. The second took sertraline or Zoloft, and the third group combined exercise and sertraline. After 16 weeks, there was no difference in the level of depression among the groups, suggesting that both medication and exercise were equally effective. But after 10 months, those who exercised were 50% less likely to be depressed. If you can't exercise for an hour, try 10-minute bursts of exercise throughout the day. If you have trouble consistently exercising, working out with a friend can help you to stick to a program. Here's another question for Dr. Wanagat. I know there are brain-related changes with age. What are the best things I can do to protect my brain? Answer. Studies suggest that even healthy older adults can experience some brain atrophy or shrinkage in brain volume. But not everyone experiences this problem, and researchers are studying them to find out why. New brain cells replace injured and dying ones in a process called neurogenesis. Researchers have linked several activities that can help maintain or increase neurogenesis in older age. One study from Harvard compared meditators and non-meditators and found that those who meditated had more gray matter volume. Meditation requires focus and concentration. The brain is similar to a muscle. Consistent cognitive practice, like meditation, helps it to stay in shape for brain health. Regular physical activity, at least 30 minutes per day, most days of the week, has been shown to slow down age-related declines in the brain. The brain has an extensive capillary network, and exercise helps increase blood circulation throughout the body, including the brain, providing a supply of oxygen-rich blood to feed brain cells. Other lifestyle strategies that can boost brain health include getting 7 or 8 hours of sleep every night, eating a Mediterranean-style diet that is rich in fresh fruits and veggies and low in saturated fats, and seeking treatment for mood disorders like depression and anxiety. Treatments for these mood disorders may work in part by stimulating neurogenesis in the brain. Here's another article from UCLA Health entitled, "Feeling Stressed Out? Relief is Just a Breath Away." Relax and take a deep breath. It's a common recommendation from physicians and friends who seek to help you to reach a state of calm when you're feeling frazzled. Breathing is an essential and automatic function. But with a deliberate focus on breathing, it's a proven tool for healing and well-being. Mere minutes of conscious breathing can help you feel better and think more clearly. Conscious breathing can change your physiologic state, explains certified meditation teacher Natalie Bell with the UCLA Mindful Awareness Research Center. When we feel stress, our heart rate may increase, our breathing may get shallow, blood pressure can rise, and we might go into fight or flight or into a freeze mode. We can actively shift that response by using slow, deep breaths and activating the parasympathetic nervous system. Sometimes referred to as the rest and digest system, the parasympathetic nervous system slows heart rate, is active during digestion, and helps bring equilibrium to the body. Deep breathing helps you calm down. That's why it's an integral part of many yoga, tai chi, and meditation classes. To gain the benefits of focused breathing, you don't need a formal or lengthy practice. Bell offers the following simple strategies as ways to incorporate the calm of deep breathing into daily life. The first is coherent breathing. When you inhale, heart rate increases slightly. When you exhale, it decreases. This difference in heart rate is called heart rate variability, and it's beneficial to the heart and body. Coherent breathing creates a relaxed but alert state by focusing on the in and out breaths. Sit comfortably upright, supporting your back if desired. Take a few deep breaths, allowing the belly to balloon outward. Relax the mind as much as possible. Once you feel a bit more relaxed, begin the practice as follows. Exhale to a count of six. Allow several normal breath cycles to complete, and then again focus on exhaling to a count of six. Let the breaths be smooth and feel the body relaxing. Switch your focus by inhaling to a six count. Again, allow your body to breathe in and out naturally several times. Focus on the six count inhalation every few breaths. Combine these by inhaling for six and exhaling for six. There's no need for every breath in and out to be a six count, but eventually the idea is to piece together this rhythm without force. Allow your body to ease into it. Then there's the stop practice. This technique is an efficient and effective mindfulness method to create a pause or shift in the middle of the day. Do the stop practice for about 1 minute. After a stressful phone call or before talking with a loved one who is under pressure, you should stop or slow what you're doing. Take a few deep, slow breaths. Observe how you're feeling in your body as you're taking slower breaths. Notice the thoughts and emotions. Invite calm. Then proceed with what you are doing. According to Bell, visualizing the breath as nourishing can help create a more peaceful physical and mental state. As you inhale, imagine giving yourself something positive. Think of calm and ease, she recommends. When you exhale, think of releasing or letting go of stress. Perfection isn't the goal of any of these practices. People who have anxiety may try too hard to do it right. It's not about doing it right or trying to overly control it. The practices are meant to be gentle and unforced. Through time, this kind of attention can help decrease blood pressure, as well as reduce other ill effects of stress, including headaches, digestive issues, and depression. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I sure hope you enjoyed it. Thank you.